Sporty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Thanks for tuning in this evening. Welcome to the sunny side of sports.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
The sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports.
The sunny side of sports show.
Great show, bro. This is sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Let's kick off in Rabat, Morocco, where the Confederation of African Football's Executive Committee is expected to formally approve big changes to its flagship tournament, the Africa Cup of Nations, on Thursday. CAF officials are likely to move the competition from January and February to June and July. The January-February timeframe has long angered clubs in Europe, which lose their top African players during a key part of the season. And the Biennial Nations Cup is also likely to expand from 16 teams to 24. Nigerian Football Federation President Amaju Pinnick is a member of CAF's executive committee. He says the Nations Cup expansion will increase CAF's revenue, develop more infrastructure, and allow more opportunities for African footballers. In addition, the CAF Executive Committee is expected to approve changes to the scheduling of the continent's two top club competitions, the African Champions League and the African Confederation Cup. They are now likely to be staged from August to May rather than inside a calendar year. In more African football news, it looks like 2015 African Footballer of the Year, Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang of Gabon, will remain with the Bundesliga club Borussia Dortmund after being linked with off-season moves to other top European clubs. Dortmund's director, Michael Zorc, says Aubameyang is staying at the club, and in his words, the transfer window is closed as far as the Gabonese star is concerned. Aubameyang was the Bundesliga's top scorer last season with 31 goals. He had two goals on Tuesday as Dortmund defeated Italy's AC Milan 3-1 on their preseason tour of China. In January, Aubameyang scored two more goals during the Africa Cup of Nations, which Gabon hosted. The Gabonese squad played to draws against Guinea-Bissau, Burkina Faso, and Cameroon, and did not advance past the group stage. The indomitable Lions of Cameroon lifted the Nations Cup trophy for a fifth time in Libreville, Gabon, where they beat the Pharaohs of Egypt 2-1 in the final. Just ahead on the sunny side of sports, we'll transition from Nations Cup football to Gold Cup football.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, an in-depth discussion on African elections. What makes a ballot credible? Some political observers say African elections are often merely selections. We'll tackle the difference on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here.
This is the Voice of America.
Washington, D.C.
Voice of America.
I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Now let's go to Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, where quarterfinal action kicks off later Wednesday night in the CONCACAF Gold Cup football tournament. This regional championship competition is for teams in North America, Central America, and the Caribbean. Costa Rica will play Panama in the first quarterfinal in Philadelphia, and that will be followed by a match between the USA and El Salvador. Under Gold Cup rules, teams are allowed to make up to 6 roster changes after the group stage, and U.S. coach Bruce Arena took full advantage. He brought in 6 new players for the knockout stage, and 5 of them are expected to start this evening against El Salvador. They are goalkeeper Tim Howard, midfielders Michael Bradley and Darlington Nagbe, and strikers Clint Dempsey and Josie Altidore. All 5 players compete in Major League Soccer when they're not fulfilling U.S. national team assignments. Howard plays for the Colorado Rapids. Bradley and Altidore are both based in Canada with the MLS club Toronto FC. Nagbe, the son of Liberia's former team captain, Joe Nagbe, is with the Portland Timbers, and Clint Dempsey is with the Seattle Sounders. The defending MLS Cup champion Sounders are one of 14 clubs in action later Wednesday night as Major League Soccer resumes its regular season schedule. We're more than halfway through the MLS season. Let's take a quick look at the league leaders. The Chicago Fire and Toronto FC are tied for the best record, 11 wins, 3 losses, and 5 draws, and 38 points. New York City FC is next with 33 points. The top scorer in MLS right now is Serbian striker Nemanja Nikolic of the Chicago Fire, who has 16 goals, Mexican striker Eric Torres of the Houston Dynamo, and Spanish star David Villa of New York City FC are next with 12 goals each. Our VOA football fans will remember the 35-year-old Villa was named Major League Soccer's most valuable player in 2016.
This is my first award in big award in MLS. When I come in here, you know, and nobody, all the journalists know, I wanna forgot my experience in Europe because it's a new step in playing America. I wanna make history in America too, and I always say the same, no? The recognition of the people is the most important to me, and this award is so much.
Spanish football star David Villa of Major League Soccer's New York City FC club. Getting back to the CONCACAF Gold Cup tournament, there will be 2 more quarterfinal matches on Thursday night near the western U.S. city of Phoenix, Arizona. Canada will play Jamaica, and that will be followed by a match between Honduras and defending champion Mexico, winners of a record 7 Gold Cup titles. The Gold Cup semifinal matches will be played on July 22nd near Dallas, Texas, and on July 23rd near Los Angeles, California. The Gold Cup final is July 26th at Levi's Stadium in Santa Clara, California.
Music.
I encourage our VOA listeners to check out the Sunny Side of Sports Facebook page. The address is facebook.com/VOA Sunny. Once again, that address, facebook.com/VOA Sunny. You'll see photos and videos, and you can post your comments. So check out the Sunny Side of Sports Facebook page.
Voice of America.
Our Voice of America listeners can also follow me on Twitter. My handle is @VOASunnySports. Now let's go to Cooperstown, New York, where the National Baseball Hall of Fame will welcome 5 new members on July 30th. In this encore Sunny Side of Sports presentation, reporter Jonah Haskell tells us about those who will receive their sport's highest honor.
Joining the ranks of baseball's greatest players is the class of 2017, our first baseman Jeff Bagwell, outfielder Tim Raines, and catcher Ivan Pudge Rodriguez. Bagwell, who spent his entire career with the Houston Astros, was a dominant and consistent hitter, as Hall of Fame president Jeff Idleson pointed out.
Jeff combined power, consistency, getting on base, and an ability to score runs to become one of baseball's premier first basemen, averaging 32 home runs annually, drove in 90 or more runs 10 times, and scored 90 or more runs 10 times as well.
Bagwell could hit for both power and average, as evidenced by his almost 450 career home runs and .297 career batting average, but he also had great discipline at the plate, leading the major leagues in walks in 1999. Bagwell combined all these skills in his debut season when he won the National League Rookie of the Year award, but that was simply a sign of things to come, as Bagwell was named to 4 All-Star teams and captured the 1994 National League MVP. The Astros' first baseman played from 1991 to 2005 when he retired at the age of 37. Bagwell is ecstatic to have made the Hall.
Like I said, it's surreal just to be in this situation, to... being the Hall of Fame, it's crazy, man. And I couldn't be more happy to be here and just trying to take this all in. So thanks.
Joining Bagwell in the Hall of Fame's class of 2017 is outfielder Tim Raines. During his career, Raines, who is from Florida, played for 6 different teams but spent most of his time with the Montreal Expos, where he used his blinding speed to become a terror on the base paths, as he led the National League in stolen bases for 4 years in a row from 1981 to 1984. Jeff Idleson also mentioned how durable Raines was during his career from 1979 to 2002.
Tim Raines was rock solid, playing in 23 seasons. 19,000 have played in the major leagues. Only 20 players played longer than Tim Raines.
Raines was also a strong defensive outfielder, using his blinding speed to cover huge stretches of ground, and he was able to reach baseball's pinnacle in 1996 as a member of the World Series-winning New York Yankees. After being elected in his final year of eligibility, Raines was understandably relieved.
It's an honor. I'm so proud to be here. It's actually something I never really expected as a young kid.
The final player member of the 2017 class was just a young kid when the other two were in the twilights of their careers, but after becoming the first Puerto Rican player ever elected during his first year on the ballot, he is a worthy addition to the group. Ivan Pudge Rodriguez, a big catcher from Manatí, Puerto Rico, was one of the best hitting backstops of all time, as he connected for 311 home runs en route to 14 All-Star selections and the 1999 American League MVP. Pudge was also a masterful defensive catcher with a cannon of an arm that helped him earn 13 American League Golden Glove Awards during his 21 years of service for 6 different teams. Rodriguez was a member of the World Series champion 2003 Florida Marlins and currently holds the record for the most games caught in a career. Pudge was excited to be going to the Hall of Fame with 2 players like Bagwell and Raines.
Happy to be here with all of you guys, together with 2 good friends, even though that we never played together, but as a baseball player, we are like a family, even though that we play against, we respect each other, play the game hard, play the game the right way.
These 3 outstanding players will be joined in the Hall this year by 2 executives, John Schwerholtz, who led the Kansas City Royals and Atlanta Braves of the 80s and 90s to glory as a general manager, and Bud Selig, commissioner of Major League Baseball, during one of its most trying periods, the steroid era. This year's induction ceremony for Bagwell, Reigns, and Rodriguez will be held in Cooperstown, New York on July 30th, and they will be joining a very select group.
And in the long history of professional baseball, there have been 19,000 players, just about 19,000 players, who have been talented enough and privileged enough to wear a Major League uniform. And of those 19,000, only 1%, one out of 100, get to the Hall of Fame.
For the Sunny Side of Sports, I'm Jonah Haskell in New York.
I'm out at Brooklyn, now I'm down in Tribeca, right next to the Narrow, but I'll be hood forever. I'm the new Sinatra, and since I made it here, I can make it anywhere. Yeah, they love me everywhere. I used to cop in Harlem, all of my Dominicanos right there up on Broadway. Pulled me back to that McDonald's, took it to my stash spot, 560 State Street. Catch me in the kitchen like a Simmons whipping pastry. Cruising down A Street, off-white Lexus, driving so slow, but BK is from Texas. Me, I'm out that Bed-Stuy, home of that boy Biggie. Now I live on Billboard, and I brought my boys with me. Say what up to Tata, still sipping my top. Sitting courtside, Knicks and Nets give me high five. I be spiked out, I could trip a referee. Tell by my attitude that I most definitely from
Joining us once again on the Sunny Side of Sports is Andrew Palcheski, the VOA's social media reporter. Sporty greetings, Andrew.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. Good to be here with you as always.
Welcome back, Andrew. What's trending on this Wednesday?
Well, I know you talked a little bit about the CONCACAF quarterfinals coming up between the U.S. and El Salvador. Some big social media news about that it's going to be broadcast on Facebook, and there's going to be a whole bunch of social media going along with that. And that's part of the broader trend that we've talked about on the show, that social networks are really embracing different sports leagues, trying to partner with different sports leagues to broadcast that content. And on that note, there's a battle brewing, actually, on social media over the World Cup. We're still about a year away from the 2018 World Cup. But the social networks and some of the big titans of social networks, Twitter, Facebook, Snapchat, are competing to get the rights from Fox Sports, which has the broadcast rights here in the U.S. to air the World Cup. They're competing to get the rights to put clips on social media and are reportedly offering tens of millions of dollars for those rights. It's an amazing turnaround because if you look back at 2014, they really didn't do much on the social networks for the World Cup. It was very talked about, but they didn't make an effort to show any clips or anything like that, get involved in the game that way. This is a big push forward, and they're willing to pay a lot of money to get that. So it's going to be an interesting battle shaping up off the soccer pitch, even before any teams take to the World Cup there in Russia, to see who can get those rights to put it up on social media.
Andrew, I know you have some Tour de France cycling news for our VOA listeners, but first let me give you the results from Wednesday. The Tour is winding down. Shout out for Slovenia, Primož Roglič. He is the first Slovenian to win a stage in the Tour de France. He won stage 17 on Wednesday. The overall leader is three-time Tour de France champion Chris Froome. He has a 27-second lead over the Colombian Rigoberto Urán. And a Frenchman, Romain Bardet, has the same time. He's 27 seconds back. And Fabio Aru from Italy is 53 seconds back. So as the race winds down, we have four riders within 53 seconds of each other. Should be a very exciting finish on Sunday in Paris when the Tour de France winds up. What's trending with the race, Andrew?
Well, let's stick in that general vicinity, all those Europeans that you talked about, and let's talk about a cyclist from Poland, Paweł Pojanski, going viral after he put up a photo on Instagram of his legs post-race. And he put the comment, after 16 stages, I think my legs look a little tired. That is an understatement if you see this photo. His legs are, first of all, his thighs are absolutely massive. I think it's about the size of my waist, each of his thighs. These legs are covered in bulging veins, huge veins all up and down his legs. And then about midway up his thigh, you see a very stark tan line. Of course, because riders are wearing those racing outfits and they cut off right about mid-thigh. So you have the lower part of his leg is a nice golden brown color, and just above that it is like milk white. So an amazing photo that people say looks like a Hollywood makeup artist's creation for a horror movie. It looks gruesome, it looks brutal, and really speaks to the brutality of the Tour de France and how these athletes really push their bodies. But people are absolutely amazed by this. It's a new way to get a sense of how hard these athletes push themselves. And perhaps my favorite comment, somebody said they should make leggings with the veins on it. That could be the new fashion trend. You can go out wear those leggings and look like you're really in the Tour de France, but actually just maybe going out and getting coffee or whatever. But an amazing, amazing picture shows the amazing athleticism of these riders.
And those riders will wrap things up again on Sunday in Paris. And I think there will be a time trial on Saturday in Marseille. But it should be an exciting finish, Andrew, to that great race.
Yeah, with all those riders so close, it's going to be something to watch for sure.
What else is trending out there, Andrew?
Well, we go from the riding outfits, which of course very form-fitting, to something a little looser, the NBA uniforms. And big news out of the NBA that Nike has replaced Adidas as the official supplier of uniforms for the National Basketball Association starting in the 2017-2018 season. And Nike has made an announcement about what these jerseys are going to entail and what they're going to look like, and some very interesting stuff. First of all, they're doing away with home and away jerseys. Now teams are going to have four different colors to choose from. The road team is going to have to pick a contrasting color based on whatever the home team picks. So not just the, you know, one home jersey, one away jersey, or two home jerseys, one away. It's going to be four different jerseys. Some cynical people saying that's a marketing move, that you can now sell four times the jerseys that you could if a team just had one. But it's also very high tech. Nike reportedly used 3D imaging to find out where players sweat, how they move, to better fit their bodies in these uniforms. And the uniforms are reportedly going to be made out of recycled plastic bottles, which I think is pretty cool. So they've turned those plastic bottles into the fibers for those uniforms. Fans love it on social media. They think that some of the uniforms that have been leaked so far look amazing. A couple people say, I don't like them, I like the old ones better. But for the most part, it's getting really positive reviews from fans. And they're very eager to see those uniforms on display when the season kicks off later this year.
And I think the NBA also, similar to top football clubs, Andrew, will be showing sponsors' logos on the uniforms very soon.
They will. That's a new thing that they're going to start doing. So that's something that's had a mixed result from fans. Some fans not too happy about that. They think the corporate sponsorship should stay off the uniforms. Other fans say, hey, it's inevitable. Look at everything else. Every other arena is named after a corporate sponsor. You have the courts are named after corporate sponsors, so why not include the uniforms in that as well? But no doubt this is going to be a big moneymaker for Nike in the coming year.
Andrew Palcheski, the VOA social media reporter. Thank you, Andrew.
Thanks very much, Sonny.
And that wraps up the July 19th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Nick Ivanoff. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
I get it.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In early July, President Donald Trump announced an additional nearly $639 million of humanitarian aid for the estimated 20 million people affected by food insecurity and violence in Somalia, South Sudan, and Yemen. Tens of millions of people are in need of humanitarian assistance as a result of the man-made crises in South Sudan, Nigeria, and Yemen, all of which are driven by violent conflicts. and in Somalia, where ongoing conflict is exacerbating the effects of severe and prolonged drought, said Acting Assistant Administrator for the USAID's Bureau for Democracy, Conflict, and Humanitarian Assistance, Robert Jenkins. Despite the influx of aid that has helped to alleviate famine in some areas of South Sudan, and has so far prevented famine in Yemen and Somalia, the overall food security situation is worsening, and life-threatening hunger continues to spread in both scope and in scale. In all four countries, conflict has been the primary driver of humanitarian need. In Somalia, conflict has made it difficult to reach some communities in dire need of food. In South Sudan and Yemen, civil wars have destabilized the economies, crippled agricultural production and trade, and sent the price of food skyrocketing. In Somalia and Nigeria, the regions that have been beset by violent terrorist groups, Al-Shabaab and Boko Haram, and ISIS West Africa, respectively, are among those in the greatest need of humanitarian assistance. Through this additional funding, the United States can provide emergency food and nutrition assistance, life-saving medical care, improved sanitation, safe drinking water, emergency shelter, hygiene and health programs to treat and prevent disease outbreaks, and protection for civilians who've been affected by conflict, including both those displaced internally and as refugees. This additional funding brings the total U.S. contribution to over $1.8 billion in humanitarian assistance for the four famine crises since the beginning of fiscal year 2017, said Mr. Jenkins. We will continue to work with our international and local partners to provide this life-saving aid needed to avert famine and to support communities impacted by these crises.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, an in-depth discussion on African elections. What makes a ballot credible? Some political observers say African elections are often merely selections. We'll tackle the difference on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
What's up, Africa? I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington.
And I'm Nadia Sami. Thanks for joining us. We'd love to have you on board. This is Upfront on The Voice of America.
Listen, we need to discuss what's going on in your communities, issues that affect you.
Are you involved?
Are you engaged in transforming your society?
Today, right now, this is your platform.
Let us know what you've been up to.
Check us out on Facebook. Drop us a line.
It's Upfront Wednesdays at 17:30 UTC
right here on VOA Africa.
To our audience on VOA's FM in Accra, Ghana, we'll be off the air for 3 days of July 20th, 21st, and 22nd to do necessary technical repairs. We will resume our broadcast on July 23rd. However, you can still listen to VOA's radio programming on our shortwaves, 6080 kHz, 49.3 meter band, and 15580 kHz, 19.2 meter band. We are also online at voanews.com. Your friends at VOA regret the temporary loss of our FM broadcast on those days.